Saturday morning.
All right, anytime you're ready, Jerry. I am ready.
That is from a well-known opera. I do nothing but intellectual things, friends. It's time once again for one of our big public service broadcasts entitled The Anti-Intellectual Hour. Bring it up big there, please, friend. My friend, this is Attila the Hun here. I'm waving a big fat bone here, drinking a locker's head full of mead.
Yeah, I got it just like a little mead. Put the hair on your chest, bring it on. Come here, baby. Sit down, my baby.
Now, there's nothing as refreshing as good, honest dishonesty. I mean, you know, it comes right out.
Charles, he's doing one of those silly, noisy programs again. He's such a nice young man and has such a nice mind. I just don't know why they allow him to do that. I'm going to write to John Gambling and see if we can get that straightened out.
Out of the back of my head, yeah. You're lucky I'm on the radio. I'd have said something else beside my head.
Let's go in here. 1, 2, 3, 4. Come on, hit it. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2. Yeah. Thank you. How you like that, man, huh? Reset that, please. He says we have a brand new engineer and he's looking a little shocked. A little shocked. Brand new engineer. Never seen this done before. I tell you, he used to be the audio engineer on the Metropolitan Opera. He's really shocked. Would you reset that in there? Just cue that up in there. We may need that a little bit later. Have you seen this... tell you the hell. Oh, hey, you're doing it on the... Hey, you're cooing it on the air, fella. There you go. Da, 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 dee, dee, dee. Oh, man, the spirit of hedonism is on the march. Everywhere you look, hedonism. Hedonism is winning out, friends. Yeah. Now, maybe you don't know what hedonism is. I mean, really, actually. I mean, everybody uses the term, but hedonism has to do with the ultimate swing. And it does. It's the ultimate digging. And in fact, very early in the days of the Greek philosophers, there was a great deal of argument as to which of six different philosophies was the most efficacious.
Which is to say, which is the one that worked best. Do you know what those six were, what they were called? Now, this is going to appear, by the way, on the Blue Book examination at the end of this semester, so you damn well better know. Now, think seriously on that. One is called hedonism. That's spelled with an H, as in hot dickety dog. H, okay? Or an H is in hoo-ha, woo. And this is, of course, hedonism is winning out. How many of you heard the beer commercial, the one that comes on and says, you only go around once in this life, so grab all the gusto you can. You heard that commercial? That is a commercial that literally says, look, friend, there ain't no tomorrow, so to hell with it all. Get bagged tonight, fall down the stairs, yell and holler, and bust the windows, kick your shoes off, pinch a chick on, well, and go all the way, you know? I thought, you know, that's kind of an interesting thing. And these little signs in the wind, of course, show that there's a great philosophical change that has come out and come about in the Western world in the last, oh, maybe 100 years or so. And now they're coming out and saying it. See, it used to be people used to hide it, you know. And now they come out right on television in beautiful color, full color. Have you seen that commercial? Now, for those of you who are curious, see, we're still skirting the issue. Grab all the gusto, they say. Grab all the gusto. What the hell is gusto? Would somebody please look up gusto? Don't quite come out, you know. Wait till the first honest beer commercial comes out, you know. It's just, hey, man, why don't you tie one on tonight, huh? I mean, you know how it is. You're working for that slob. You're married to that pig. Why don't you just tie one on tonight? Grab yourself a big 12-pack. Let's hear a little more of that music there. Come on, let's hit it again. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Some of these things, you're going to miss me, honey. Ba-ba. Some of these things, ta-da-doo. You're going to wonder where the hell I went. Ba-ba-da-doo. I'm going to split, split, split. Make a big fat trail of dust down U.S. 66. Ba 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 doo ba da da doo doo. Ba 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 da doo doo doo. Ba ba doo ba da da doo doo. Ba 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 da da da. That's a sick scene. My God, what a way to earn a living. Tell you. Terrible. Hey, listen, I don't like to disturb you here, but I got a note here from a student of philosophy here. It says, Shepard, you know, I just wonder how you got to be so rotten, you know? It says that we here in our philosophy class at Hofstra have been discussing, you know, how various people began to decay, and when they... How, for example, did Kafka get to be the way Kafka was? You know, he started out a nice guy. Next thing you know, he's writing stuff called Metamorphosis. Wow, it has to do with bugs. Oh, terrible. Well, all right, I'll answer that question. Because at a very... Let's put it this way. At a very crucial age in my life, speaking of things that are crucial... Before we do anything else, you know, Shepard has his price, like everybody. We've all got our price. And, you know, it's not easy sometimes, you know, to hide it. And would you please get ready with the money button? Shepard's price has been met. Hit it. Hit it, hit it, hit it. Ding dong.
Dr. Pepper! Dr. Pepper may be America's most misunderstood soft drink, but not for long.
This is Mayor Lindsay shouting to you from Times Square. If you're having a problem hearing me, that's the problem. Ear pollution. 150 decibels of noise is enough to drive a man insane. And in Midtown New York, it's already at 77. Noise is our fault if we use steel garbage cans instead of plastic. And noise is our fault if we blare our radios or don't complain when somebody else blares theirs. I'm sorry if you're having a problem hearing me. Noise is our fault if we blow our car horns. Besides, that's against the law unless it's a matter of life or death. Just listen to the horn. It's a pain in the ear. If we don't cut down on all this racket, we're going to drive ourselves nuts.
Oh, this is exciting.
Wow, 21 gallons.
Charge it, sir?
I don't have my Chevron credit card.
Oh, how about American Express, Master Charge, or Bank America?
Or money, too.
All Chevron dealers do now.
Great, here's my card. Say, this place looks like a tropical island. Palm plants, native masks.
Here you are, sir. Come again.
It's this lovely little spot of rest and relaxation.
Bank America good for everything you have on Chevron Island?
Yes, sir.
Good. I'll take 3 native masks, a dozen palm plants.
Yeah, it was nice. Chevron Island. Just so soft and peaceful there. Route 3. Have you noticed that hardly anybody ever today uses money? You know, the other day, he couldn't buy gas because he didn't have his credit card with him? Very important. Another sign, you know. Hey, I wonder how many... Speaking of credit cards, I wonder how many guys rue the day that they ever saw a credit card. Because you couple credit card with an advancing wave of hedonism, and friends, you got yourself a real ding-dong by the tail. Oh, man. It's terrible. You know, get that little piece of cardboard or that little thing of plastic, and it doesn't seem like you're really spending money. So what the hell? I got my credit card, you know? And it's only later on when you get that funny letter, you know, that comes in with the glass, little glass window on the front. And you wonder who spent $7,922 and that they want it for, you know? And that's the trouble with credit cards. You see, the thing about money, and I'm going to make a statement of somewhat basic philosophy here. The thing about money is that it's basically frightening. Money. I mean, you take a $10 bill and you look at it, man. It is an official document. I mean, it does. It has all kinds of signatures and numbers all over it, and it's official. So when you hand it out, you are making an official statement. And also, because it is such an official-looking document, you know, think about money, you know, very rarely does money have jokes printed on it. I mean, I've been all over the world. All money looks really fantastic. In fact, I have a Shepherd's famous rule of thumb of declining kingdoms. Reads thusly. You ready for this, philosophy students out there? Now, this will appear, by the way, on the exam, so I'm giving you time to get out your notebooks there. Shepherd's rule of the declining kingdom reads this, that whenever a country is either nothing to begin with or it is rapidly beginning to descend to the mire of history, hence, it is losing out, its stamps get bigger. The tinier the country, the bigger the stamps, right? Any of you guys that are stamp collectors, you know this. I mean, you get a stamp collector, let's say, from West Zambago, which is an island, you know, about 7 feet across, and it's in the Zamboanga chain, which is a lesser-known group of islands attached to the Tonga chain. And it is ruled over by one short, fat guy with a G-string, and he has 2 concubines, and they have a post office there in which they print the stamps. Now, these stamps usually come with gold leaf on them, and some of them even have fringe on them. They're fantastic, you know. They will cover maybe 3/4 of a standard letter head. And nobody ever uses them to mail anything. They are bought by collectors, which says a great deal about the utility of the country itself. Nobody ever mails anything from this country. They just send out the stamps all over the country, all over the world, you know, and guys buy them, right? Well, you have noticed that our stamps are getting bigger. Now, for those of you who are not, have not noticed this, take a look at some of these fantastic. Our stamps are now in Technicolor. You remember when America was really a fantastic big country, you know, really a tremendous power. In fact, most countries, when they are really powerful countries, don't know they are, you know. True. It's a power power is one of those things that people take for granted. It's like when you're 22 years old, see, and you're 7 feet 9 inches tall, and you just take for granted that you can hit a ball 422 feet. You know, Mantle, in his heyday, never questioned it. He just, you know, hit the damn thing, that's all. All there was, nothing to it. Well, it, you know, became harder and harder, and one day, he was popping up a lot. And then, he suddenly became aware of the power which he no longer had. Then he would go around, wear T-shirts with the sleeves ripped off, and keep moving his muscles back and forth, pulling in his gut. But it still didn't matter. He still couldn't hit it up into the upper deck, right? Okay, countries are like that. And so when a country is at its absolute peak of power, tremendous power, such power, it doesn't even know it's got, It's just sitting there. So what does it do, It turns out little tiny stamps. They don't prove nothing. Nobody, just little tiny stamps. We used to have a little stamp, a little 3-cent stamp with a picture of George Washington on it, and it was sort of a greenish-blue. Do you remember that little tiny stamp? You could hardly see what was on it. It was kind of a smudgy little stamp. Okay. That was because we didn't, we didn't have to prove anything. Today, our stamps, I just got a stamp sent to me. In fact, I got a letter this morning, which was kind of embarrassing. I spent 15 minutes reading the stamp. Didn't I realize this little thing attached to it was the letter? And the stamp, big, 6 inches by 9 inch stamp that said the salute to Grandma Moses, Henry Ford, the American U.S. skiing team, and the Kayak Indians. It was a tremendous, beautiful stamp, a mosaic, and if you held it up to the light, it would be like stained glass window and all. And I said to myself, well, there's another example. Hi, George. Now, let's take the case of money. Now, a few years back, America, the money, the dollar bill, the old crummy, scrudgy little dollar bill. You didn't worry about it. Our money was the least prepossessing of all monies in the world. But you went to countries, were really on their uppers, really scratching, having bad news, And you'd go to a place like Italy, where their economy, the average guy would be working for like $9 a year, and they eat nothing but pasta, and once in a while they get a little drink of vino, that's about life. They had money. You could get some money in Italy that was like a tablecloth. Beautiful money. Tremendous, big, magnificent color pictures of Garibaldi and that fringe on it. Fantastic. And it had said the 375 lira note. And, of course, when you finally translated, that meant 12 and a half cents in U.S. dough. So my feeling is that as a country, so goes the country. As it begins to scratch. By the way, this is WR New York, so you can be all right, Jay. Just be calm there. I've noticed, too, that the smaller the radio station, the more pompous the station break. And so, here you've got this big behemoth here, WR. Always, it's WR New York. What else can be? Sitting here at 710, just blatting out all over 7,000 states, squirting out 50,000 watts into the ocean, all over. Who cares, But when you get these little stations, now, you drive around and you get way out in the Pennsylvania hills or someplace, and you hear this announcer. It comes out with a great big deep voice. Can you give me a little echo, please? Typical radio station announcement. I'll give you the cue for it. Hello. Okay. WLOCUK, where iron meets coal in the heart of the friendly Allegheny Valley. 1, 2, 3 on your dial. The family spot. WLCUK, your spot for news, entertainment, and life itself. Where coal meets iron. That's a 210-watt station, which can be heard over a 30-acre radius. Roughly, if you've got a good receiver at the fringe end, you see. And so you find that this follows through in almost every area, too. Have you noticed that the littler and the skinnier the guy and the thicker his glasses, the wilder the mod clothes become. See, he's got to get people to notice him, see? And he doesn't have much going, so he gets himself a set of magnificent tailored bell-bottom trousers that whistle Dixie, you know, when you walk through a puddle, and it's fantastic, you know? And he's got a snakeskin vest, and he's got the psychedelic glasses. He grows his hair down to his navel. He's trying everything, and here he is still, a 110-pound weakling, if just like out of the ads, you know? So this philosophy holds all the way up and down. You'll find that only the very wealthy people, I mean the people who really have everything going for them, can afford to drive around in a 1941 Chevy, you know, with the back end bashed in. Oh, yeah, you'll find this is... do you know any wealthy people, any of you? I mean, really wealthy. I'm not talking about a guy that made it big in the used car business in Queens. I'm talking about people with D-E-A-U-X, bucks. Oh, I mean the real big thing. Well, the higher you go, I mean, till you reach that pinnacle of absolute security, you know. I mean, the power behind the throne. You'll find that these guys generally wear old tennis shoes that they bought at Montgomery Ward, you know, right? Old rotten tennis shoes. They got a pair of 27-year-old jeans with the bottom shot out, you know. And they've got an old sweater once that they got when they were going to school, and now they've got leather patches on it. You know the whole thing? And so, yeah, and you go to their house, you see, and their furniture's worn out. You know, you never expect that. You go to this guy's house, and his furniture's battered and worn. It's just, he doesn't have to prove anything to anybody, you know? Right? Well, now you go to the guy who's just barely making it. See, 6 years ago, he was working on the number 3 checkout line at the A&P. And now he hit it, you know, he's kind of lucky a little bit that... And the next thing you know, this guy, he's got this fantastic color TV set with outriggers, you know. By the way, speaking of TV, one of the nuttiest, I suppose you can say, manifestations of the total showbiz kookiness of our time, you know that you can now buy, have you seen it? You can now buy a cabinet, see, and it's a, you know, big cabinet, but it's got 3 television consoles mounted in it. You seen that one? So that you can be sure you can watch all of 3 channels at once, see? and to me, this is a kind of a nuttiness that, and of course, to carry it to its furthermost outer limit, you see. Now, this same chassis, if you look carefully at it, you know, the same chassis has a stereo tape recorder in it. It also has a tape playback unit in it, has an FM-AM receiver and an FM stereo or multiplex receiver, all through separate channels. So this dildoc can sit there, see, watching 3 television shows with a pair of cans plugged into his stereo tape recorder, and at the same time, the recorder unit is recording an FM radio show that he can play back later, see, so in case he misses it. So here he is, he's plugged into the world. And what's he getting? Well, that's the problem, you see. The trouble is that most people think that they really are plugged in the world by watching television or by listening to the radio or by going to a movie. I think one of the saddest, truly one of the saddest slogans that has come out of our time is one that you've probably seen a lot. Get more out of life. Go to a movie. That is so sad as to be almost... It stops me. In other words, get more out of life. Go and plunge into a fantasy. I mean, a true fantasy. And what's worse, it's not even a live fantasy. It's a bunch of lights and shadows flashing on a screen. You know, there is a certain amount of argument that you can make for, say, a live Broadway show. At least you're seeing other live klutzes walking around pretending to be something that they're not. And, you know, there's a certain communion between... You can say, hey, look, Hamlet's sweating, see? And for crying out loud, I never knew that Ophelia had acne, you know? Ooh, wow. At least it's live. But you go to see a movie, and what are you doing? You see nothing but a light bulb. That's all you're seeing, you know, a light bulb that's flashing around up there on the screen. Have you ever thought of it that way? That's all it is, friend. And then now they've added another thing to it. Have you heard the second part of that slogan now? For a long time, you know, the slogan's been around, get more out of life, go to a movie. Well, now the second part that's appearing in ads is, they print it in two parts. On one side of the ad, it says, get more out of life, go to a movie. And then it says, get more out of movies, go out to see one. Meaning, to me, this is compounding sadness to have to tell the guy, come on, for crying out loud, quit looking at them old movies. We're not telling you to look at, Channel 2 at 4 o'clock in the morning to see whether Priscilla Lane, is going to make the scene with Jeffrey Lynn. Go out and see the movie, see the latest fantasy. So this combination of fantasies which people live in, people really get furious. I've seen this time and time again. You see it by the mail. They really get furious when you tell them you are not going to get life out of a novel. You really aren't. And they think that's an anti-intellectual remark I've made, which would be kind of silly for me since I'm a writer, and have worked as a writer for a long time, that I hope, retain enough perspective to realize that a novel is not life. It is a guy telling you a story. Now, the assumption is always made, well, no, he's really telling me about life. Well, that's sad that you have to be told about life right there. Because, you are as alive as Philip Roth is. He is no more alive than you are, friend. And you're a hell of a lot liver than Charles Dickens is. But nevertheless, it will be interpreted by many people as an anti-intellectual remark that I've just made. Like I'm telling them not to read. I'm not. I'm saying read, but don't fall into the sad delusion that you're living because you're reading. You're just not. And of course, then again, you get down into definitions of what life is. What is life? Now let's take experience. Now, if you were to sit down and read a novel, let's just say a book, use the word novel. Let's say you were to read a book about, let's say, Sierra Leone. All right, you're probably, the chances of you going to Sierra Leone are very remote. So there's a certain justification in saying that I'm reading about a thing and a place and a world that I will never be in, and I want to hear what one man said about it. I added that with great thought. One man said about it. That doesn't mean that you're reading about that country the way it is. You're reading about what one man said about it through his biases, his prejudices, his vision, which is different from yours. And I'm not putting him down. He's valid for him. But you must understand that's what you're doing. Now, what always baffles me is people will go to movies and read novels about things which they ostensibly are totally involved in themselves. For example, let's take a very simple basic human function, sex. I mean, let's face it, I'm not being obscene or pornographic to admit that everybody is born with it. I mean, that's the way it is. Now, let's carry that a little bit further. I suspect that people who have a great need for this in movies or books are people who don't have it in their real life. Now, this has been said many times before, but I'm repeating it because I believe this is genuinely the truth. You're thinking about that now. And this is one of the reasons why the very young are always fascinated by pornographic novels and by pornography in general. And I'm using the word, of course, you can argue whether there is such a thing as pornographic, and I'm just using it as a symbol of something. I'm making no value judgments here. I'm saying, however, that the young has a fantastic, really, the very young. Now, you can be very young, immature is the word, really. You can be very immature and be 68. You see, you can be immature and be 97. That means part of you has not ripened. Okay? It has not much to do with the chronological age. On the other hand, a person can be 10 and be highly mature. This is the other side of the scale. And I have noticed that there is a certain kind of person who really thrives on dirty jokes. Really does. I mean, in fact, his entire conversation, you should, hey, have you heard this one? And immediately, there's another kind of guy, you see, who gets who is a little vaguely embarrassed by this, because he doesn't have the same need. See, he doesn't have the same need. He doesn't have to hear dirty jokes, you know, to get a vague titillation about it. He may have a lot of it in his own life, so why does it, you know, who needs to talk about it, you know? Who needs to go to a movie? Who needs to go to watch a couple of Swedish actors, you know, and a Swedish actress and so on, have a big scene somewhere in a fantasy in the second reel over at Cinema 2? Who needs it? Well, a lot of people do, to answer this question. A lot of people do, because a lot of people ain't getting it, frankly. In other words, that there are certain areas of life where people, the need for things is often, well, it's a basic thing. If you need something, it's because you have not got it. That's what a need is. If you need money, it's because you don't have it. If you have money, you don't need it. And that follows all the way on down the line. When people say, well, it's the need, I have this need. Well, they do. They generally do have a need. But they shouldn't assume that everybody else has the same need. They do not. and merely because you have a need and somebody else doesn't have a need, it does not necessarily mean... And by the way, have you noticed, too, that people tend to cover this up? Very few people will concede the honesty. They demand honesty in an abstract, but honesty in a realization is not a thing worthy of discussion. In short, if you read a, let's say, a cinema review, you're reading, now I've done this many times, I've seen many of the pictures and many of the things which, you know, are being hailed all over as great, new, fantastic insights into men's constant search for his identity. He is attempting to find his search through erotic means. And they go on and on. See, another magnificent essay on man's essential loneliness from that famous Danish photographer and director who gave you, and so on. Well, this is this is even sadder than the picture. It's an attempt to intellectualize a totally non-intellectual experience. In other words, why can't somebody admit that he loves a dirty movie? What's the matter with that? Why do you have to pretend you're one of the saddest examples of that is I Am Curious Yellow, where in the middle of the picture they keep inserting this almost ludicrously adolescent, quote, a girl searching for knowledge. And to me, this is true hypocrisy in action. And most of these pictures that I've seen are so joyless, they take no joy in what's happening. Which is a kind of a sad commentary on it, too. And possibly that's why the people who dig these movies dig them, because they themselves have been running away from sex for years, and it's one of the few little experiences they had when they were nine were totally joyless, and so they're hoping to find that this is true. You see, so they go to the movies, and yes, indeed, it's a joyless experience. Yeah, I know, I see it. Don't worry about it. I'm on top of it, friend. So, you know, in when you get further into these things... is this boring you and I, this discussion of pornography? I find it a fascinating subject, and I have known many people who have been critics and one thing and another who have worked in these areas. Maybe that's what has colored my view of it, because some of the saddest little people I know become violent critics, and they're always attempting to, quote, break down Puritan morality. But the thing that you find out is that they're the only ones that have got it. I mean, you find more sexuality going on in the average house in Queens on Friday night, friend, and you could shake a stick at. I'm serious. And it's only in their life that this is quite often found. Now they wind up talking to themselves. It's the Andy Warhol syndrome, and they wind up discussing it among themselves, always trying to pretend it's the others who have had a fear of sex and who don't want to get right out and have it. You know, I'm sorry, friends, it ain't that way. Else, why is there a population explosion? This is not happening through osmosis, Dad. But that's something else again. You know, you get so deeply involved in this, but it is an interesting subject, and we're living in a time where people are living more and more, unfortunately, I think, are living more and more in the abstract. They're living more and more vicariously. And so you have two groups of people, really, that are living side by side in our time. You have the one group who lives in this little enclosed capsule, and almost all of their experiences are pre-digested. They surround themselves with novels, books, and plays, which is pre-digested experience, no matter how you look at it. Now, there's the other group who's out there doing this stuff. So there is a constant war. One calls the other anti-intellectual. The other calls the other a long-haired egghead, or whatever he might find. But yet, they are two separate and distinct types. And I don't think I think this is one of the basic splits in our country today. You're never going to find that, and the two are irreconcilable, really, ultimately. I hope I'm not sounding anti-intellectual, because I am also, I speak with some knowledge here, an omnivorous reader since I was five. And I think if all the books that I've read, because I am an omnivorous reader, I can't help it. All the books that I've read could probably, fill in all the swamps on Staten Island with no problem at all. But I do attempt to try to have some kind of perspective. And as a critic and a commentator, I suppose you can say in this case, on life and times of our day, I think we're going through a great transition. I think that earlier in man's experience, I'm talking about historically here, experience, true genuine experience, was the rule and was easily, it happened to you. It was there. This was especially true of frontier countries, that nobody who's living on the frontier, friend, has to read hunting and fishing magazines. He just doesn't need it. It's only a guy who lives on Utopia Parkway who needs hunting and fishing magazines. And so, ultimately, as time goes by and as life gets more and more complex technologically, and I think population has a great deal to do with it too, that genuine experience is less and less accessible, until finally you live in the great lonely city where many people don't even know somebody of the opposite sex. They're the ones that need cinema too, real bad. And that's not putting them down. It's a fact of life. And so this will grow, I think, as our world becomes more urban and we become more compartmented. It's a kind of paradox. As man lives in greater numbers, he is separated from his fellows by a greater distance. The curious fact of herd life. Do you have that little thing up in there? We have one more ding-dong. Hit the button, please, if you will. Yeah, the big money one there, the one with the dollar sign. There you go.
Big, quiet the Ford green Galaxy button. 500, and we added a vinyl roof. We added all vinyl interior trim and special metallic paint. We added chrome rocker panel moldings and chrome door edge guards for better-looking, longer-lasting value. And we added beautiful deluxe wheel covers. Yes, we added all those extras to a Ford Galaxy 500. And then cut the total price by $110. See for yourself, it's right there on the price sticker. Now stop and ask yourself a question. In these days of high costs, doesn't it make good sense to buy from the guy who gives you more? Galaxy 500 is the same luxury-equipped car it's always been. Still has that famous quiet ride. And right now, Ford Galaxy 500's got all those extras, and we actually cut the total price $110. Come on. See your Ford dealer during his economy drive.
Oh, wow. I was just waving a lot of it. If you wonder what all that noise and yelling was, that in the next studio is one of my favorite people, old Jeff Holder. By the way, you know, I rarely plug shows, But I would like to suggest, if you know, a lot of people don't know about weekend radio. They really don't. They listen to it Monday through Friday, and that's the end of it. But my show is also on Saturday night, and I think we've got a great juxtaposition of shows on a Saturday night. That just before my show, I'm on from 5 minutes past 10 to 11 on Saturday night. Just before my show is the Jeffrey Holder Show, which is an extremely hip show. Great guy. Hey, I meant to tell Jeff Holder that commercial he does for, is it 7-Up? That is one of the best. You ever seen that commercial where he holds the lemon up? And he says, I meant to tell him that's one of the best commercials I've ever seen. You know, he's sitting on a porch, front porch, it looks like on the island someplace, and wearing a big white hat. Watch for that commercial. It's a beautiful job of acting. I'll never forget Jeff. In case you don't know much about Jeff Holder, who's on before me on Saturday, the first time I ever saw Jeffrey Holder, and incidentally, he's an extremely talented painter, the first time I saw Jeff Holder was in a Broadway, a magnificent version of Waiting for Godot. Oh, he played in the Broadway with Burt Lahr. And I want to tell you, that was one of the greatest Broadway productions I've ever seen in my life. And he was fantastic in it. I'd like to talk to him about that sometime. People often write, you know, and say, when you talk about, again, this anti-intellectual thing, pro or con, experience versus experience, to me, Waiting for Godot is an example of what art should be, but rarely is. That's a whole subject of another 15 shows as to why I say Waiting for Godot is more valuable than, let's say, I Am Curious Yellow. And that goes on and on. But I've lost a lot of interest in this. I'm telling you this as a member of Equity and a guy who's been in quite a few productions himself. I've lost a great deal of interest in the theater because of possibly the advancing, creeping, it's hard to say it, but the theater itself has become anti-intellectual. In other words, it's curious to see an intellectual art form become anti-intellectual, and it is. I find it's childish. I keep feeling like I'm in some kind of a playpen. And I'm not a child. I'm not interested in being a child. I mean, I was a child. I've had that scene, you know? And I frankly and freely admit it. Sometime I'm going to sit down. You know what I'd like to do sometime? I'd like to sit down and talk to Jeff for about an hour one night about Waiting for Godot. Because the performance he did in that particular version, I wonder how many of you saw it. Very few, I'm afraid, because it closed after about 10 performances. But it was a genuine work of art. But then again, there's cinema too, friends. And don't forget, think about it seriously. I want you to go out this weekend and get more out of life. Go to the Route 3 Drive-In. I mean, you know. I suspect ultimately they may do that. There's probably more life going on in the back seat of a Pontiac in the Route 3 Drive-In than is ever going to happen on the screen there with Charlton Heston, you know, wearing orange paint and a bearskin rug playing God. Well, bring it up big.